This is Steve Sherlock with another series of podcasts for Franklin Matters. In this session, we'll continue the budget workshop that was held on Monday, January 25th. This is part five of the session's recording. School Superintendent Maureen Sabolinsky and Finance Director Miriam Goodman cover the overview of the Franklin Schools budget. Understanding the budget is the document that will accompany this. They cover pages 1 through 5. There's a couple of other documents that will be associated with this. Their links are provided in the blog post that accompanies this. So, without further ado, let's get into the discussion.
Salaries, health insurance, transportation, and special education. When you look at this graph that you have in front of you, our current budget is $59,297,820. Of that, 83% accounts for salary and health benefits. $37.8 million we spend on salaries. $4 million on health care, our out-of-district tuition costs, which Sally and Beth are going to get into in a little while, $3.8 million. Transportation, both regular and special education transportation, $2.4 million. And other expenses total about $2.3 million. Those include materials and supplies, professional development costs, and contracted services.
When you think about most of the, what goes on in classrooms for your children or your neighbor's children, $2.3 million, you know, across a district of 6,100 students is not a lot of funds for technology, for textbooks, for pens, pencils, crayons, those things, field trips. You know, our operating budget is pretty lean when you take the salaries and health insurance out of it.
We don't even have a line item.
No, that was gone several years ago. To the capital subcommittee, you've appropriated funds for our books.
Maureen, what's the present enrollment?
It's about 6,150. It's gone down a little bit. We lost about 150 students this year.
Versus last year.
Versus last year.
Yes. Question, what was the number difference from the junior high or middle schools than to the number of incoming freshmen?
Middle school.
You mean 8th grade to 9th?
How many left
the high school? It ended up being about 100 students.
100 students less.
Yeah. Right. And some of the students have been coming back.
So, but a lot of kids lose. If you look at it historically, they lose 50 to 60 kids every year. They go to Tri-County, they go to Bishop Feen, they go to different, between 8th grade and 9th grade. This year there was a little more, you know, folks leaving, but it wasn't substantial if you look at the overall 60.
Yeah, and I mean, in talking to middle school principals right now, as opposed to last January, the request, all the applications for private school have to go through the principals in the middle schools. It's back to where it has trended over the last 10 years. Last year was a blip, and I think a lot had to do with our budget situation, and there was not a lot of solid information. And some of the reorganization at the high school and some of the things that have gone on, I think, have allayed feelings in the community, and people are feeling really good about the high school at this point. So we're pleased with that trend. You know, the applications are down right now as opposed to a year ago.
And just so people understand, this is how much money you get. How much money does the school spend?
$62 million.
Right. I just want people to know that, because they have federal grants, they have, you know,
special ed grants,
entitlement
grants, Title I.
Right.
This is how much is locally funded. That's the local part. So when we talk about our salary budget, again, 75% of our budget goes towards salaries. We have a document in front of you, looks like this, that basically explains our salary steps and lanes in our teacher's contract. So teachers would move from a step, for example, a bachelor's, a new teacher coming in, perhaps that bachelor's step one on
bottom.
Right. We're currently operating off of the middle guide,
right?
Because the teachers took a wage freeze this year. So we're operating off of the middle guide. So in theory, if a teacher started on bachelor step one last year at $37,265, that teacher moving up to step two this year would be making $39,935. So based on where our population is, these are the salaries that we're paying out that total, the 38.
And there are two ways teachers can earn compensation: years of experience, which is going down in the salary grid, or by earning additional degrees, and they can move across horizontally on the grid. So as teachers work towards their master's degrees or beyond, they can earn more compensation for academic study. And I think some of the things we hear in the community is, oh, we'll just get rid of those grids. It's not possible. We're certainly welcome any suggestions how to, you know, compensate our personnel in different or creative ways. It is a contract that is negotiated. And at this point, I mean, I think teachers would be open to alternate types of compensation, but I think in the town right now, economically, we really are not in a position to really have much to bargain with. This is the compensation grid that is pretty standard across the country. It's not an anomaly to Franklin or to Massachusetts. It's pretty much the way teachers, educators are compensated nationally.
And you have to get a master's degree in Massachusetts.
Right, within 5 years.
And how long has this formula been in place?
40 years.
Okay.
I don't know when Franklin still had a collective, but when collective bargaining came to Massachusetts, if you look at school contracts, they weren't as long or as deep because you didn't have to get a master's degree. But even 20 years ago when I was on a school committee, it looked just like this. The numbers were lower,
yeah.
But it was the same system.
Pretty consistent. I've been employed in 3 states, and yeah, okay. The grids all are similar and consistent, so... I think, down the road there may be options through ed reform, but right now this is our reality, and, to live within the means of that contract.
Right, so we're facing reality, and so if reality next year says another wage freeze, and then another wage freeze, and...
That's a negotiated item.
That's a negotiated item.
So the formula changes or it doesn't change?
That's a negotiated item. They have to agree to it.
Any changes to these grids
have to be voted on by the union membership.
Wow, okay. So you're saying this is permanent?
No,
I'm saying this grid,
that's a 3-year
this grid
contract.
Expires June 30th, 2010.
A great setup.
Okay, so...
So come August 30th,
right.
2010. August 31st. So come September 1, there isn't a grid in place.
Okay.
So you keep the grid that is last in place.
Teachers would be where they are on the bottom grid that they would move to effective August 31st. And they would stay there until a new grid was developed and agreed upon between the union and the administration.
But the model is the same.
And the lanes are the same. That can't be altered.
So the bottom line is, if they give a 0 increase, this wouldn't change. If they gave 1%, everything changes 1%. If they give 2%, it changes by 2%. But in the big scheme of things, the steps and lanes or levels is not going to change dramatically one way or the other.
But when you say, like, impossible or it can't change, what you're saying basically is because this is, the national standard, I mean, the political infeasibility of, even if the teachers in Franklin, even if everybody in Franklin said, yes, let's do it, the probably political pressure at the state level to be the first to,
if the local teachers had agreed to it, but I mean, it would have to be through the process of negotiation.
Because sometimes, folks will hear it's impossible and think that means we're not trying to think creatively. And I just wanted to be clear that the impossible.
Well, make no doubt, I won't speak for this teachers' union, but I can tell you that some of our unions get lots of pressure from statewide organizations not to agree to certain things within the collective bargaining agreement. Because then the next town's going to have it, and then they get angry. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, quite frankly, the teachers' union is that much different. Could they, slowly migrate to something? But they're not going to show up in any one year, and this is going to be 3 steps with 4 lanes. It's just not going to happen. So can the school committee or the council, the TA, whoever negotiates, say, hey, these are tough times, let's, everybody gave up their wage, last year voluntarily until the end of, until next fiscal year. Every contract's up for negotiations next year. Everybody knows it's a tough year. So we'll wait and see what happens. But that being said, understand that if everybody's a year, unless people have been here 10 or 11 years longer, everybody's getting a pay raise because of the way the system is. Now, if you look at the town contracts, they're a little the same, except that everybody maxes out in about 5 years, and there's no educational criteria in the collective bargaining agreement. So if you get hired as a clerk, you start at one, you know, X, then year two is X plus this, and then when you get to five, you've maxed out. So it's just a smaller, tinier version of the same model, and things like education are not built in it. They're on another part of the agreement. So the police get, well, used to get, or still get Quinn Bill, and there, we do have educational incentives, but it's not built into the salary grid. It's figured on a case-by-case basis. So it's not that much different, is the bottom line.
Right.
Yeah.
So the, it's 1 year between steps?
Yes.
Right.
So they max out at basically 10 years?
Right.
Well, except when you get a master's,
right,
you move it to 11
over.
Or 12.
You can move over, you go down and over, depending on the academic credits you attain.
Okay.
And we wanted to just kind of put that out there because I think
we've
heard a lot in the community, well, you know, just get rid of the grid, and it's not feasible.
Well, I mean, this is what happens. If you have someone who's been in there, let's say, maxed out at 12, right, and you're making $76,000, for example, $76,131, you know, they're not going anywhere, they're going to stay there. The talk on the street is, you know, well, wow, we're paying that one position that amount. And it doesn't really encourage the young folks to come in. We're coming in at, I don't know, let's say they come in at 38. And then, you know, they can't stay, you know, because...
Well, there's two ways to look at it, if I may.
Yeah.
Citizen.
No, I'm good.
I know where you're going. And that's where I think there's...
No,
that's fine. Okay. And that's fine. You know, wife's a teacher, former teacher, prior, but...
Disclaimer.
From a straight talk perspective, okay, there's two problems with that. Yes, once you hit the top, all they get is the cost of living increase.
Whatever's negotiated.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, if, and we're at about a 50-50 split at this time in terms of who's at max, et cetera. If you switch that, then you're going to get the step increases every year plus the cost of living. So you will actually get more of a salary increase up to the 10 years. You're actually better off for two reasons. One, your costs are better after the 10 years because it's predictable. It's the cost of living. Plus, the teacher having survived that long, is certified, fully certified, still the State Department, et cetera, and the school department does a good job in terms of enforcing, so that they're the better teachers.
But we're assuming under good conditions. We're assuming that...
That conditions don't make any difference in this point.
Because then you're saying that, you know...
But I think the reality is I think we're kind of locked into the grid, and that sort of is a good guide to develop, and we do scattergrams of what teachers are on what steps, what lanes, so we can
that's
keep good control down the road
about the
of what our potential costs are going to be contractually from year to year.
I'm just questioning the formula.
How do we pay in comparison to other towns either adjacent to us or towns that we'd like to be compared to?
Yeah, we're in the middle.
We're in the middle.
Yeah. Financial, long-term financial plan had a chart with, what, 30 towns?
Mm-hmm.
And we were right in the middle.
We just completed, through NASBO, a compensation analysis of the surrounding towns, about 15 surrounding towns, and we're dead in the middle for all of our contractual bargaining units. So. We're not the highest, we're not the lowest.
So I understand that this contract ends at the end of the summer this year. Based on the contract that's here, what's kind of the locked-in percentage increase that we're going to see every year?
What do you mean by that?
I'm saying based on this contract that was signed 3 years ago.
Right.
What was the percentage increases that we were going to have?
Right here, 2%.
Two and a half.
Right, but 2.5 is the increase between step one.
No.
Year.
Cost of living.
Cost of living.
The cost of living. Right, that's what I'm saying. So that's
between
how much
step
more
one
the
each
same
year.
Step
right.
makes.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
But we also know that everybody goes up a step as they
Right.
As they stay for another year. So what's the...
It varies based on the step where you are.
No, you have to know what's the aggregate cost of moving through the system.
No, what I'm saying is that we now have experience that said we negotiated a contract that had a 2% cost of living increase. What was our total cost increase? So that gives us what the cost of the steps were.
Yeah. Right.
So average 5 and 6%
annually.
Right.
Typically.
Average is 5 and 6.
So, okay. Depending on the cost of living.
No, I understand. So the conversations that I hear are, we're seeing increases of 6% wages for this population when the overall tax base, for the most part, for 2 or 3 years from a compensation is relatively flat. I mean, there are plenty of places where people haven't seen wage increases since 2006, and in some cases are making less than they have. So in comparison, when we go in and have budget conversations of why we should have overrides or why we should raise tax base, we have to be able to explain why a tax base increase is going to fund a 6% increase in a wage base when the taxpayers are saying, I haven't had a raise in 2 years.
Right. That's a fair statement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's formulaic, and I understand it's negotiated, and this one's done.
And the other piece is, you know, not too many industries hire somebody with a professional degree at $36,000. That's a pretty low starting salary. Most, people coming out of college with a college degree.
But to your point is that unless something changes, this will continue.
Right.
Because even if there's a 0% increase granted,
we're going to see 3.5%,
and then when the economy gets better or whatever gets negotiated, it goes back to the 5 or 6 that they talked about in perpetuity, unless you had everybody, as Steve said, at maximum, at which point you were paying everybody $75,000 and $78,000. And then they say, oh, we're only giving them 3%. So, but semantics at that point.
Right, exactly. So I think that's, again, that's the question around how do you explain that, and it's something we're going to have to consider as we go through the budget process for this year around talking about raising that base. What does it mean?
And there is, you know, a political reality that it is what it is.
With the length of service, is that based upon school years teaching? And does it matter where you've taught, you know, what school district you've taught in? Or do you have to have 4 years in this school district? So it doesn't matter where you are or where you've spent those years or how they're...
When hired... The superintendent's office has discretion on where to put someone. They evaluate their resume, transcripts, and place you on an appropriate step and lane.
So if you're a tenured chemistry teacher and you're looking for a job, and she has to make a decision, where can you meet the person to make them happy for the least amount of money? And that might be, you know, step 8 or step, who knows? And that goes on in a regular
basis. It's not just length. So, like, say if you taught chemistry for 3 years in Russia or, you know, wherever, and then
every person she hires.
We would evaluate that.
Just make an interesting example.
No, I just wanted to make a point that, too, as somebody who's been in teaching now for a while, I can't get hired anywhere else at this point in my career as a teacher. I'm maxed out. I won't get a job. That's why I'm back for an administrative degree, because they can hire 2 probably starting teachers for a little more than what they're paying me. The fact is, I can't go anywhere else. They won't hire me, and that's what happens in education. So,
and it depends if you're a math teacher or a science teacher, you have a better shot. You can be more mobile. Because there are shortages of certain teachers.
English history
teachers are pretty much locked in once they hit the maths.
No, and I understand that, and not that it's going to make you feel any better, but it happens everywhere else, too.
Right.
I mean, we have accountants that have been there for 12 or 13 years and basically at the same multiple that you would be of starting people, and we'll replace them with one starting person, not two. So,
but then I would like to figure that my years, but my years of experience and everything would factor in, and that's why that's when we are always back. I'm constantly going to school.
No,
yeah. That's all I want to say.
We're all facing the same reality.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say.
Health insurance, Jeff kind of, he really spoke well. We've worked very closely with Jeff, Stephanie, our HR director, and worked with our unions to get the best bang for buck in health insurance premiums. Our teachers union is our biggest union, and they've been a great partner in going along with and voting for the health care plan redesigns. So we're hoping to look at those options. We've really kept our costs contained with respect to health insurance.
Transportation overall, we spend $2.4 million in transportation. That's our in-district vans, where we provide the driver and the vans for our special ed population in-district. And it is also for our big yellow buses that you see on the streets. We have pay to ride fees in place. We are currently those fees are $325 per child. I think the important thing to take from that is that that does not cover the entire cost of that bus. It subsidizes, that cost is subsidized by the school department, but it's it comes closer to a $700 to $800 per seat cost, and we're basically charging $325 for that seat.
So the cost is what?
About
$800. There's two numbers here. The 2.4 is for the entire. There's one cost for general transportation.
Correct.
And then there's a cost for special education.
Correct.
She's giving you the total. The pay to ride is only for the general transportation.
Right. But she's saying it's more than that.
No.
It's $800 bucks per kid. But we're only charging $3.25 for the pay to ride.
Right.
But it's not more than 2.4.
Okay. Right. So we do transport in district to our special education programs in district that Sally and Beth are going to speak to in a minute. And we contract out for our out of district transportation for our special ed population.
And that is also goes out to bid. Those we work with
through our collaborative.
Through our collaborative. So we get try to get the best price.
While you're switching, at the $800 per student, would that be subsidizing the special ed transportation?
No, that pay to ride
fees.
Mandated transportation is only required by Mass General law for students in grades K to 6.
More than how many miles?
Right. More than 2 miles.
In excess of 2 miles. Mm-hmm. So any student within that 2 miles who wants to be transported can pay to ride the bus. And any student in grade 7 through 12 who wants to be transported can pay to ride the bus.
No, I just the question was, you said it's around $800 per seat. And I was wondering if the $800 was subsidizing the special ed transportation or just the yellow bus
transportation.
Federal
transportation.
Fed's 100%.
Excellent.
Okay, so...
Thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.blogspot.com. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was produced by Michael Clark in the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes, copyright 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.